Welcome to the London Walks podcast, presented by Andy Hallett and Adam Scott Goulding.
Right, it's episode whatever 19. It is. Episode 19.
Have we nearly done a year?
We've been podcasting for more or less a year.
Yay.
Happy birthday to us. Thanks for listening. We are doing London poetry.
Not one for big celebrations, are we?
Not one. We're very low-key here at the London Walks podcast. We're doing London poetry for our episode today. We're in North London on a beautiful sunny day, and we're feeling poetic, are we not, Andrew?
Absolutely, yeah. And poetry kind of turns up all the time in all our walks, I think. I mean, I kind of mentioned quite a few poems, you know, during the course of my walks. Do you as well, Adam?
Quite so. I think it's an inevitable consequence of a great city is that the great and good come here to achieve the things for which they're famed, and many poets are scattered along the routes of our London walks.
I was thinking about that, actually. There was, that, you know, Dylan Thomas, I suppose, boozing up in Fitzrovia and the Soho.
Well, see, you know,
is that right?
Notoriously thirsty types, these rhymers. So wherever we find these characters, these literary characters, we often find an entertaining strain of tale.
Yeah,
they're
not always local to London, really, are they? They're always often from Scotland, Ireland, Wales, from all over the world.
But denizens rather than citizens,
absolutely
yes.
I don't know who am I going to. I suppose. Well, I almost immediately think of kind of 16th century and kind of early 17th century. So I'm going to speak about my little piece. Maybe, well, kind of Shakespeare immediately kind of draws to mind, but also. I think Ben Jonson as well, great rival and friend perhaps of Shakespeare. So I'm going to talk a little bit about him. Also, I think he's great because he went on this journey to Scotland. He walked to Scotland and he met up with a guy called William Drummond. And he kind of spilt the beans, loads of wonderful literary gossip. But he wrote a great poem called On the Famous Voyage, which was a trip down the River Fleet, a kind of metaphor for London at the time. So I think I'm going to talk a little bit about that.
Ideal, and Shakespeare is the elephant in the room whenever we talk about topics relating to letters. And can we claim him? Did we do this on the theatre podcast?
Probably.
Did we claim him for London?
Yes.
He may well have been born in Stratford, but he did all his writing here. So he's a Londoner, we are having him. And I'm having Robert Burns as a Londoner.
Good.
As well.
Yeah.
Am I going to get into trouble by calling him the second greatest writer these islands ever produced? Yeah, I'm going to get into trouble for that. But I'm going to deal with Burns because he came up on our Kensington walk by accident. We got into a discussion with some lovely London walkers about the Prince of Wales. And his position regarding him becoming the next king. And it was people had a range of opinions. Yeah. And they asked me my opinion on Prince Charles, and my opinion was based on his reading for the 250th anniversary of Burns's birth, his reading of Robert Burns's My Heart is in the Highlands, and I thought it was very revealing.
Okay, fantastic.
But certainly in Soho, as you say, when I lead the Soho walk on a Friday morning, the thirsty poets are there, wonderful pictures of
William Blake as well, I suppose.
Well, quite, absolutely. Now, isn't the thing about Blake that Blake never travelled? Now, have I got this right? Never travelled any more than 17 miles outside of London.
I didn't know that.
I need to check that, but I think if it's true, I admire the sentiment greatly. I don't think anyone should travel any more than 17 miles outside London.
I read the other day that someone worked out that Dickens, as a boy, and William Blake would have kind of walked past each other every day. When Dickens walked down towards Charing Cross to work in the arch there, over by Charing Cross, and today's embankment, they'd have probably passed by each other almost every day.
Wow, okay, those overlapping London stories. I love them. I love those wild coincidences. Dickensian coincidences, perhaps we could call them as well.
Yeah. I'm also going to talk about John Taylor as well, the water poet.
John Taylor, the water poet, not the bass player from Duran Duran. Different John Taylor.
Not as good. So he went on a kind of eccentric journey as well, which gained him some notoriety. He tried to sail from London to Queensborough in a paper boat.
Wow.
And, inevitably, it sunk. But for oars, he had to use two canes with stockfish tied to either side. But he wrote about that.
Yeah.
They tried to reenact it in 2006, Adam. I thought maybe we should have a go at doing that.
I think we should. I think 10 out of 10 for blue sky thinking there. I'm pleased with that.
But he wrote a poem called In Praise of Hempseed. And he mentioned Shakespeare and Beaumont and Philip Sidney and loads of other wonderful poets of the period. He was great. Not particularly sophisticated poet, I'm told, but wrote brilliant stuff on the, you know, the kind of character of people. Very keen observer of character.
We have contributions as well this month on our blog to tie in with the podcast. Lance, who leads the poetry walks, he's got written a couple of things for the blog.
Yeah. David, surely.
David will be weighing in.
He can't wait.
He's rhyming away as we speak.
Loads of ideas, Ed.
Plenty ideas. He's wandering the heath as we speak, reciting poetry. Well, we've been out on Hampstead Heath with our big butterfly net, and we've managed to capture David in full spate. We've dragged him in front of a microphone, and here he is, reflecting on poetry on London walks.
I suffer from an incurable case of bibliomania. I love books, and especially poetry. Have done for over half a century now. So for sure, poetry figures in my walks, in every single London walk I guide. And look, these aren't party pieces just for my walks. Great poems, poems that I love, dozens of them, are part of the equipment through which I see London, see my world, see the world. And there's nothing namby-pamby, artsy-fartsy about that. Poetry mainlines important stuff that we have no other way of accessing. It's an experiential entry. It privileges us. Gives us access to the life of the past, to other times, to other people, to how they lived and loved, to what they wanted, to what they feared, to how they coped. In a word, to what they felt. Without poetry, those kinds of things are a closed book. There's virtually no historical evidence of those matters, no record. The records we do have are, for the most part, things we can quantify. How long people lived, how much trade they did, how much money they made, what diseases they had, when they were born, who they married, how many children they had, when they died, etc. All of that's grist for the historian's mill, but it tells us next to nothing of what their inner experience was like, how it felt to be alive then, what it was like to be them. We get that, vicariously but powerfully, from great poetry. It's like thermal imaging. It shows intensities of feeling. And you want to know what the gain to a walking tour is like from great poetry putting in an appearance? Well, feeling-wise, it's like a great musical leitmotif coming up in a film. But then, hey, poetry, great poetry, is great music. But you want to know what the gain is? Well, maybe consider these two poems. The first one is a few lines from Milton's 23rd sonnet. It comes into my old Westminster walk. We're at St. Margaret's Church. I do the history, of course, the important contours of its past, the hard facts, who, what, where, when, etc. The talking, as always, in harness with the walking, the pointing out. I show my walkers the Milton window, decode it for them. I talk about his living locally, his being Cromwell's Latin secretary and what that actually meant. Talk about how Charles II saved Paradise Lost with the greatest throwaway line in English history. Talk about the banns being read in St. Margaret's for Milton's marriage to his second wife, Catherine. How they were blissfully happy for 15 months, and then she died, not long after giving birth to their baby daughter, Catherine, who also died, and that both mother and daughter are buried there in the churchyard. And that this great personal tragedy brought forth what I regard as one of the greatest poems in the English language, a poem that manages, somehow, to be at one and the same time an elegy, but also a love lyric. And I add that the poem's not well known at all, which completely mystifies me. And then I give it to my walkers, prefacing it with a gentle injunction. As you listen to this, you need to bear in mind that it was written by a completely blind man, who has just lost his beloved wife and their beloved baby girl. Here's the poem. Methought I saw my late espoused saint come vested all in white, pure as her mind. Her face was veiled, yet to my fancied sight, love, sweetness, goodness, in her person shined so clear as in no face with more delight. But oh, as to embrace me she inclined, I woke, she fled, and day brought back my night. See what I mean? Thermal images, intensities of feeling. Who wouldn't be glad to hear that note sounded on their visit to the parish church of the House of Commons, as St. Margaret's Westminster is often styled? The other one I almost always do on my Westminster walk is Cathedral Builders by John Ormond. I do it in Dean's Yard when we're looking at Westminster Abbey. Again, it's a poem that's just not on most people's radar. And for that matter, most people haven't heard of the poet himself. But what a welcome guest it is to the party when we're taking survey of Westminster Abbey. What I love about it, what everybody loves about it, is that it shows us the people we don't normally see, shows us the ordinary people, the cathedral builders, rather than the kings and queens and other VIPs who are buried there. Reminds us of just how heroic those non-heroes, those ordinary people were, the people who actually did the work. Gives us privileged access to their lives and times, what it was like for them, what they felt, how they felt. Here's the poem. Welcome to the late Middle Ages, everybody. Cathedral builders. They climbed on sketchy ladders towards God, with winch and pulley hoisted hewn rock into heaven, inhabited sky with hammers, defied gravity, deified stone, took up God's house to meet him, and came down to their suppers and small beer. Every night slept, lay with their smelly wives, quarreled and cuffed the children, lied, spat, sang, were happy or unhappy, and every day took to the ladders again, impeded the rights of way of another summer's swallows, grew grayer, shakier, became less inclined to fix a neighbor's roof of a fine evening, saw naves sprout arches, clerestories soar, cursed the loud fancy glaziers for their luck, somehow escaped the plague, got rheumatism, decided it was time to give it up, to leave the spire to others, stood in the crowd, well back from the vestments at the consecration, envied the fat bishop his warm boots, cocked up a squint eye and said, I bloody did that.
One of the questions addressed by David is, how do we use poetry on London walks? I was thinking about just this topic the other day as I passed the statue of Robert Burns in Embankment Gardens. It's a comment worthy statue, not least because Robert Burns didn't ever set foot in London in all his born days, but neither did he visit Sydney or Dunedin. And just this summer, I went to visit statues in both of those cities of Scotland's national poet. His reputation, therefore, is wide-ranging. His influence, too. Burns came to mind on the Kensington Walk not so very long ago. We were at Kensington Palace discussing with a group of London walkers Queen Victoria and Prince Albert and the royal family in general. And I was asked a question. It's a question that comes up a great deal when dealing with the royal family, particularly from visitors from North America. Will Prince Charles be the king? Is he fit to be king? Well, that's not up to me. But I considered the question, and I remembered that for Burns's 250th anniversary, a few years back, the BBC asked the great and the good on the national stage to contribute their favourite Burns poem to mark this big anniversary. His Royal Highness, the Prince of Wales, the Earl of Rothesay, to give him his Scots title, chose a very revealing poem. My heart is in the Highlands. My heart's in the Highlands. My heart is not here. My heart's in the Highlands, chasing the deer. Chasing the wild deer and following the roe. My heart's in the Highlands wherever I go. I admired the Prince's choice here because I thought it to be most revealing in light of the question, will he be king? The selection of My Heart's in the Highlands told me that the Prince is a most bucolic fellow, perhaps more at home chasing the deer and following the roe in the Highlands than he is at Clarence House on the Mall. So how do we use poetry on London walks? Well, we use poetry to reveal the soul, reveal the inner workings of the characters that populate our London walks. I was delighted around 20 years ago, just after I moved to London, to find my all-time favourite Scots poet featuring centre stage on the Poems on the Underground campaign. I say campaign, the idea being that poetry takes the place of advertising on the London Underground trains, which I think is a very good idea. They're published in book form as well, Poems on the Underground, but my delight at seeing the great Hugh McDermott featuring in broad Scots, in synthetic Scots indeed, his own project, Synthetic Scots, taking all 12 Scots dialects and mixing them together in his poetry. I was delighted that we were being stretched and challenged by the people at the Poetry on the Underground project. The poem featured was The Bonnie Brookett Bairn, in which Mr. McDermott questions our talk of high-minded ideas when there's so much to be fixed here, down on the ground. Mars is bra in cramacy, Venus in a green silk goon, the old man shacks her gowden feathers, their starry talks a wheen of blethers, nane for thee, a thochty spairin, earth, thou bonny brookit bairn, but greet, and in your tears you'll droon the hail clanjamfrey. I've yet to find an excuse to include that particular poem on a London walk, but I remain a big fan of the Poetry on the Underground series. Long may it rain. When we encounter Robert Burns in statue form in Embankment Gardens, the poem that I always use is one of his most famous, To a Mouse. Burns, like so many of the great writers, is open to interpretation from all ends of the political spectrum. I'm told that even in the days of Soviet Russia, he was a great hero to the Communist Party. Perhaps they found a clue in his humanitarian statement in To a Moose, which begins in broad Scots, but moves, changes gear in the second verse to the more universal language of English, because the message is there in that particular verse, and Burns wants to be clear. As a ploughman, Burns overturned a nest of mice and saw his accidental destruction of their environment to be something of a metaphor for the big guy coming along and kicking the little guy just for the sake of it. His poem, To a Mouse. Wee, sleekit, coorin, timorous beastie, oh, what a panic's in thy breastie. Thou needna start a wassa hasty wi' bicker and brattle. I would be laith to run and chase thee wi' murdering pattle. I'm truly sorry man's dominion has broken nature's social union and justifies that ill opinion which makes thee startle at me, thy poor earth-born companion and fellow mortal. I'm delighted and not a little proud to say that Robert Burns has also featured in Poetry on the Underground. But my very favourite poem from that series is a much shorter affair and in English. A modern poet, a modern poem, and a London classic to my mind. Only four lines long, but majestic in its sweep. The great Adrian Mitchell, the much missed Adrian Mitchell, and his poem Celia Celia. When I'm feeling tired and weary, when I feel all hope is gone, when I walk along High Holborn, I think of you with nothing on.
The London Walks podcast was compiled, produced and presented by Andy Hallett and Adam Scott Goulding. For details of the full programme of London Walks, London's best guided walking tours, go to www.walks.com. The London Walks podcast was an APB production.